All right, so Brian Isaac is next, and it's right at a quarter till, so we're going to go ahead and get started here.
Thank you. Many of you are professors at Christian colleges where the relationship between your college and your supporting denomination is important. I'm sure many of you are at colleges where there are concerns about your supporting constituents, especially about the science and faith aspects of that relationship. And my talk will cover the recent conversations, concluding about 1 year ago, about these issues that we've had at Bethel College in northern Indiana, involving administrative and faculty members, pastors and leaders from our denomination and other constituents, and our college board. I'll also describe responses to the outcome achieved. Bethel College is a college of the Missionary Church, a conservative evangelical denomination, especially focused in Indiana, Michigan, and Ohio, with scattered clusters of churches in other parts of the country. We have somewhat under 2,000 students, with a traditional enrollment now around 1,200, and the college has been around for nearly 70 years. We enjoy a good relationship with the denomination, with about one-sixth of our students coming from denominational families and roughly a third of our faculty attending denominational churches. Most of our denomination's pastors and youth pastors receive the degrees at Bethel, and we do not have a separate denominational seminary. There's a range of views, some range of views, on origins at missionary churches, but among the attenders and the great majority of our students coming to us, they have a conservative, young earth, creationist perspective, and that's representative of the denomination. Among faculty, there's more diversity in perspectives on origins. I chaired the science division for 6 years about 10 years ago, and our hiring criteria then were to find faculty who were trying to reconcile the truths of Scripture with the truths from the evidence of God's creation. We did not specify that they would need to emerge with a certain resulting perspective on origins. Thus, our science and math faculty have a variety of views on origins, as is true for the religion and philosophy faculty. Most of what I'm going to be doing is narrative, so I'll blank the background for a bit and move on. It used to be that issues raised about origins by concerned parents and by other constituents were handled by a strong college president. Then there was most of a decade when changes in college leadership and in the economy seemed to dwarf origins-related concerns. A free pass, if you will. About 4 years ago, though, questions increased again, and this time our administration felt it would be valuable to reach out to the denomination and our other constituents and to work more carefully with them to find common ground and shared understanding. Several administrators and a number of selected faculty members representing religion and philosophy in the sciences were gathered to talk about what we were teaching regarding origins, with the intent that there would be further conversations involving denominational leaders and other constituents. Months later, we had such a conversation, including six or so influential pastors, with about 15 people around the table, a third administration, a third faculty, a third pastors. After talking about what we each felt was important, we spent some time searching for a foundation to a conversation about origins that we could all agree on. It was in this exercise that we recognized some of the significant differences among us. It was also at this time that our current college president was hired. So our meeting stopped for a while he could get to know us and we him. It took a semester or so for our new president to become acquainted with who we were as a college, to get to know our constituents and our denominational leaders, and I should say there was also a change in denominational leadership, and to bring his own voice and experience to the table. During this time, our president gathered representatives' voices from faculty for conversation, at one point even including a denomination head in those conversations on campus. While the process on campus was growing to include all who were affected, the denominational concerns were coming to focus on how we understood Adam and Eve within this larger picture of origins. There was talk that the college should echo the denomination's position that Adam and Eve were the first two humans created by God's hand and in his image apart from any process of evolution. Back on campus, our college president gathered the views about Adam and Eve held by representatives of religion, philosophy, and science faculty, which were compiled by our also new Dean of Arts and Sciences, and presented to denominational leaders and key pastors. There were views on campus that matched denominational positions, and others who valued trying to understand Adam and Eve in ways that grew out of different theological interpretations of Genesis and out of standard interpretations of natural science evidence. In short, the compiled document heightened the tensions. I should say here that what I perceived as a detour to consider the role of Adam and Eve proved to be critical. Matters such as God's possible use of a Big Bang creation, followed many steps later by his possible use of evolutionary mechanisms to shape DNA, seem straightforward to those of us in the sciences, but they have implications for who we see Adam and Eve to be. Details such as the genre used in Genesis' first few chapters and the relationship of these writings to those of other ancient Near Eastern cultures challenge our theologians to extract meaning from the accounts of Adam and Eve that is consistent with the rest of Scripture. For conservative pastors and lay Christians in our denomination, however, the identity and historicity of Adam and Eve are critically tied to the core of their faith. I'm sure you can already anticipate that what I have called a detour became a significant central obstacle to agreement and even to cooperation. At this point, the president-led process on campus had input from all faculty who desired to participate. Virtually all members of religion, philosophy, and science departments chose to come, along with a few other faculty from across campus. The president maintained an open-door policy, and many faculty members took advantage of that. There were regular announcements to update full faculty in the larger campus community. Now, let me note that our college president, Greg Chenoweth, actually expressed his willingness to come here and be part of a panel discussion to talk about that. It didn't work out, but I'll just add that note. So while he pulled more faculty into the process, there was also an increase in polarization to promote just one side, a single side of the issue, and this is true on both sides, actually, in contrast to this cooperative goal that the president was leading. At one Board of Trustees meeting, a proposal came forward, was introduced to make views on Adam and Eve something of a litmus test for faculty at the college. I'll say that I had been part of every on-campus meeting up to the presentation to pastors of these various views on Adam and Eve. I can't report anything firsthand about the board meetings, but I can say that somehow that vote was held off, and the college president was allowed to build a committee to work more cooperatively through the issues. The college president has always been committed, to his credit, I think, to the idea that our college and denomination needed to build stronger ties. And he responded by putting together a widely representative team, half board members, half mostly administration, some overlap into faculty administration, faculty chairs, but in ways that also represented alumni and particularly the denomination. Half of those involved were actually ordained ministers. This group met several times, eventually on campus, to hear directly from faculty. Again, there was still much taking of sides, and much of the debate actually consisted of strong efforts to change the other side. There were also worries, many worries, from all. What would it look like at Bethel if my side lost? Thankfully, that changed, and it's because the president's team of board members and administrators took a day on campus to interview faculty who actually taught material related to Origins. A few faculty members were chosen to represent this range of perspectives, and most of the morning for that day was given over to meeting with them. The afternoon included another 90-minute meeting of the team with the full faculty. That mid-March day, this is just over a year ago, seems to have been very valuable. I was the faculty member chosen to speak for those who believe God used evolutionary processes in his creative work. My most foundational perspective, I should say, is that God reveals himself to us truthfully, whether our data come from the scriptures that he inspired or whether our data come from the physical and biological works that he created. Further, that those data sets must go together. I believe they're not contradictory, not in God's eyes. So I suppose I represented evolution primarily as a consequence of this faith in the power of truth-revealing data to be a witness of God. This was quickly realized to be a theological position. I should have known I was speaking to half pastors, hinging on the truth of scriptures, which declare that not only has God made everything we see, but also that his creation reveals God to us in deeply profound ways. That is, if the scriptures are true, the natural evidence must be both truth-bearing and meaningful. Somehow this shook things up. Even those hand gestures, they started getting used by the team members. The other two faculty members there also spoke of the value to students of studying the different ways Christians deal with these tough issues. While we three faculty members each held our own positions, we each highlighted the importance of helping our students think through some of these biggest challenges to Christian faith, emphasizing that students should be exposed to other positions held by believers. Now, I expect that the factions we had at Bethel are the same that we see in most of our churches and Christian colleges. There are those standing for the truth of the scripture, which comes to us directly from God. His truth is right there in plain English, or maybe Hebrew. But we mostly understand what he meant. We claim we know what he meant. There are also those standing for the truth represented so clearly in the natural evidence, directly from what God has made. How could it be interpreted in any other way? I hope I get the same humor there. But here's what we miss by standing for just one of these. For Christians, both truths must go together. Not only must our side win, but the other side must stand too. Our process at Bethel was falling apart when each side sought their own victory and took to undermine others. It came back together when the team members began to see that both sides were standing for the truth of God's revelation. This change in perspective was not an easy transition. Now, all of us want to have a positive influence, and I think I was able to, but there were other factors. You see, the president guided that key meeting, and he didn't really set it up to let us read our pre-planned remarks. He began by asking us to introduce ourselves, our three faculty members, to the team. And the fellow beside me must have taken 5 minutes in his introduction. So I stretched my own introduction, as did my other colleague. Well, that led to unexpected questions, more responses. And by the time more than 2 hours had passed, it was only later that I realized I had never gotten to many of the things I wanted to say. There were many questions, though, along the lines of, how can someone read the scriptures conservatively and actually give credence to natural evidence? There were especially questions about Adam and Eve, the fall, death before sin, and which revelation of God's deserves the highest priority. We were grilled, but the exchange became one of interest rather than one of attack. Perhaps because many of our responses were not the expected answers, there was a probing exploration of how fellow believers could hold different views, and there was deep engagement. There were strongly stated answers, but also much humility. All three of us voiced our desire that our students be exposed to the various ways Christians handle these issues surrounding origins and larger science and faith matters. I have to say that that meeting surprised us, because all of these things simply seemed to happen in our presence. And given the large number of people praying for us, we should have expected to see God at work. From there, the process came to a close rather quickly. Our college president, who showed much patience in these years along the way, also proved very discerning in recognizing and spotting this opportunity to bring everyone together and bring the process to its conclusion. It also took willingness on the part of denomination leadership to soften their position a bit, to allow the exploration of positions rather than just teaching a single position. I should also credit our college president for avoiding a position statement describing where the college will stand, and instead committing to an educational philosophy statement describing how we intend to examine the issues. Indeed, the first, taking a position, is the job of a denomination, and the second, examining the issues, describes the role of a college. Let me wrap up by describing, I probably won't allow you to read the whole thing, describing this document along with our responses to it. It'll summarize the state of the college as we have finished the academic year following adoption of this statement. So first, you see that the issue is put in context. It became important to let constituents know that even in the affected programs, the attention, the time that goes to origins is actually a small fraction of what we were teaching. Second, you see that you see that the defense of the college's job to teach is actually described here as a charge from the missionary church. One result of this is that there is much better understanding in the denomination for what's actually happening at Bethel in teaching matters connecting science and Christianity. And this includes increased support in our various churches for sending their high school grads to us. Next is a statement of the denomination's position. I think perhaps the most surprising is right here at the bottom. Actually taking the time to say that macroevolution is not a problem. The exception is for evolution tied to humanity. That gives us more clear understanding at the college about what the most particular concerns held by the denomination really are, especially within the program for training our denominational pastors. Following is a basic faith statement that faculty members commit to. What's missing is any statement on origins. Faculty members are allowed to come in and hold a variety of views still. And finally, the document ends with a summary that notes freedom to teach both the denomination's position and other appropriate material, giving freedom to faculty members, but committing them not to contradict or disparage the denomination's position, especially highlighting contracted efforts to do so. There are those who look at this as about the best outcome we could have reached, protecting the role of faculty at the college to examine the issues and to explore with students the ways Christians have responded to these deep questions, but also respecting the position taken by our supporting denomination. There are those on both sides who felt that their side gave up too much, allowing for positions not their own, or barring faculty from engaging in contracts that would result in promoting views not held by the denomination. There are very few who think their side won. I don't consider this a bad outcome. And last, there are those, probably many actually, who are simply glad the 3+ year process is behind us now. I will say we did lose one beloved faculty member in connection with this. It was a mutual decision, not a firing. It was a mutual decision reached by that faculty member and our college president. Decision could have gone either way, to stay or to leave. But the decision was made to leave, and it was handled quite graciously on both sides. The subset of faculty who have had the hardest time, I would say, are those closest to that faculty member, yes, but also those who had concerns about what they felt were limits on their academic freedom. A few of those have since found other positions. In the sciences, perhaps the surprise is that we actually feel more academic freedom. This is a shot of our webpage, and I should be fair and say that it's the bottom paragraph I'll point to here. But this journey has increased, and here's this last paragraph. This journey has increased the importance of our conversations with students about how science and Christian faith intersect. We added a paragraph, you see it here, to our homepage to introduce the statement. So you can click here and see the statement, but we're allowed to do an introduction to it that tells students we will cover a variety of perspectives. I sense that religion and philosophy departments, religion and philosophy faculty, are a bit more wary because they are more directly involved in training our prospective pastors. 3 years, approximately 30 meetings, over 200 people involved, from the president across the academic administration to faculty, pastors, denominational leaders, the board of trustees, an inclusive and lengthy trek with only two quick stages, that first motion to the board and a final conclusion as that moment of opportunity arrived. I have to acknowledge the president's role as well as the academic vice president in the whole of this process. There are many institutions, in fact, nearly every public institution, where one cannot give credence to Christian perspectives on origins. It's as if they operate with one hand tied behind their backs on these issues. But there are too many Christian institutions that tie the other hand behind them. They've chosen to reject the credibility of understanding based on data from the creation, taking their views solely from the interpretations of Scripture. It's long been my dream, and I was able to express this to the team, that there would be Christian colleges where we didn't have either hand tied behind our backs, where those theological issues tied to origins, including those weighty issues centering on Adam and Eve, could be wrestled through by believers who are aware of each of these ways God has revealed himself. Our churches and all of our various denominations need this. Thank you.
First of all, let me say, I don't know how many colleges could have done what you've done and come out the other side. It's a scary process. It had to be scary for you at the beginning.
There were times in the middle where it was more scary than it was at the beginning. We started the process thinking, it's been fine. And then all this attention turned into, oh my goodness, you know, everyone around me is taking sides. Who do I talk to? And what are they doing behind my back, et cetera? And there came a point where this proposal to the board made us feel like, oh my goodness, should I be getting my CV ready? That was a common response. Maybe this is the wrong adjective to use, but perhaps a bully president. Not quite. But someone insisting on working these two groups together was what it took to pull it off. So I again, have to give a lot of credit to him. Again, it's no one comes out the other end thinking this is a happy experience. We have a casualty. I know that. But yeah, I agree with your sense. Steve.
Brian, thanks so much for describing this whole painful process to us and helping us to see what Bethel went through. Could you tell us the statement, the doctrinal statement by the missionary church on specifically on Adam? I mean, was that specific statement arrived at through this process, or was that from previous? Was that doctrinal statement already a previous position of the missionary church from long ago?
This was a previous position. There were some of us who hoped, honestly, that this might be an opportunity to reevaluate that, to come and look at that again. I was able to suggest along the way that the evidence 15 years ago for evolution based on the fossil record was one level of compelling. The evidence based on the genomic record now is quite another level of compelling. I suggested at one point that if we could come look at this issue in 50 years, if you back up to the Galileo, you know, is the earth moving or not situation, whoa, if we could have made our stance as churches 100 years later, it would have been so much more comfortable. So I suggested that, in part, we are in the middle of this process. And for our more conservative evangelical churches, perhaps even early in the process.
So this was just a restatement of the position of the missionary church.
Yes.
It had already been there.
Sorry, I should be more clear. The position had already been there, yes. So, Arnold?
I don't know if you can put that statement up again, that last little bit. I guess it seems like the main point is that people can
teach. You'll have to stop me when, right? Right here?
The one where it references Adam and Eve, I guess.
You're talking about the missionary church?
Well, the fact that faculty are permitted to teach other things, but not in a way that's disrespectful of the denomination's view. So it's not like they have to teach the denomination's view, or even to hold the denomination's view, but they must be respectful of that view. That's the basic idea.
When I do this in my, you know, I have a lot of the science students that come as their very first course in their science engineering pre-med program. So the way I do it is when I get to these things, I'll say the denomination position is this. This is an easy position to come to from the Bible. It's a straightforward position. When I look at the sciences, it becomes challenging to support that. And we work to do that. But I'll also add, there are other ways Christians look at these. And we think it's important that you explore how that's done. So it's a way of doing it where I'm not ridiculing the position at all. I understand it. I have been there. Many of us in this room, I think, have changed positions over our lifetimes. And to go back and understand the importance. I think it was mentioned in an earlier talk in the first session that the number of people who hold to a no-errors scripture, for example, these are kinds of things that I want to respect. And it's within that context that I think most of us are able to support this. Yeah, thanks.
Brian, was the antiquity of the earth an issue in these discussions, and also was the evidence in Genesis 4 for other humans prior to Adam and Eve an issue?
So the easy one first. I'm a physical science person. I come out of chemistry, and you know, astronomy is also one of these curiosities for me. I expected that standing for the Big Bang would be an issue. No, not at all. So the age of the Earth, and even it became apparent that evolution apart from humanity was not the issue. That was my surprise. So it truly was evolution and Adam and Eve. And I'm sorry, I forgot the second part.
Well, it seems to me that there's a lot of evidence in Genesis 4 that indicates that Adam and Eve were not the first humans. And I'm wondering if that's a part of these discussions.
Less so. I think if there had been more time in that meeting, that certainly would have come up. I think the idea of how central Adam and Eve and the fall are to our faith, for a community who would be much more willing to accept the Bible and read the Bible literally, was a bigger challenge. And so some of those were the questions.
Yeah. Back there.
Thank you for your presentation. I appreciate also the sensitivity to the fact that there are sort of doctrinal connections. Mm-hmm. Not just sort of isolated little things, but they have connections. I'm curious, though, that statement that basically accepts macroevolution but creates a kind of exception for the special creation of Adam and Eve, to my reading, and this would be a first reading for me, seems like a dogmatic intrusion on what is otherwise a scientific theory. And so my question is, how does the science faculty react to such it's a foreign body, if you will, in scientific thinking to insert what really is a dogmatic statement.
Right.
Because biologically there should be no exemption granted for humanity. So I'm curious about the science faculty's reaction.
So let me respond two ways. First of all, I would expect the biology community, even at Bethel, to take your side. The reality is, as we read the scriptures, there's something different about Adam and Eve, and it's that image of God. And I think for most of our people reading this, that right there provides the fact that it is different there. So they would take that, and you're kind of asking me to stand for positions that I want to take on one hand and support on the other. But I think that idea of the image of God, created in the image of God, is, I think, the reason the denomination steps in there to make that point. And many of our students don't find that to surprise that we would, I believe.
So. We have time for one more.
I wonder if you can tell us what sort of the denominational position was on the John Walton model. Did they, given that came into sort of observation,
It was not appreciated at all. we know better. And I don't know that there's too much more I can
say. So they regarded that as like too liberal.
Right,
them.
Certainly.
Okay.
Certainly.
Thanks.
Yeah, that's fair.
So. Thank you for speaking. Thank you.